happy Mother's Day. We are so happy you're here, and mothers, we congratulate you. And Elizabeth and I are here because we love mothers. Her mother is deceased. My mother is living. Some of you had great mothers, others not. Some of you are mothers. Some of you are not. But today we're going to do something a little different. I'm going to teach in a passage I've only taught once in my entire life, but it's about women. So we're going to do that in just a few moments. But I thought I'd ask Elizabeth. She wrote a blog. She has a blog that comes out every week and wrote one on mothers. And I'd like her to read it as we open up and talk about mothers today.
Limitless. May you mothers be strengthened with all power according to his glorious might. For all endurance and patience with joy, giving thanks to the Father, who has qualified you to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. Colossians chapter 1. They are hardly perfect, these mothers that we elevate, applaud, snuggle up to for storybook time, and lean into for shelter from harsh elements and horrid situations. They do their best, exert the greatest effort, and yet, regrettably, often come up short. Rarely do they have all the answers, much less a handle on what the questions are anymore. In general, they press on when fatigue is winning the round and weariness is a looming forecast for the days ahead. They jump through hoops and walk a shaky tightrope between worlds different than the ones they once knew when they were innocent little girls. And yet, flawed as they are, regardless of their shortcomings, it is distinctly certain that mothers care. They stand up for you when others bully or ignore or ridicule or marginalize or misunderstand your intentions. They cheer you on because they know your particular weakness better than most anyone, and yet they want you to overcome and soar. They know what you are capable of, for they saw it in your eyes the moment you were handed over to them. And they will do everything possible to ensure you succeed, willing to pay the highest possible price to get you there. A mother loves deeply, the way oceans overflow with a limitless capacity. Mothers love with a protective arm and a keen eye, vigilant for all things dangerous and deceptive. She loves endlessly, even if hardly a drop ever returns her way. With tenderness and fierceness, a mother pours out love in sacrificial measures, for hers is an unconditional, all-encompassing, altogether wonderful love. In the midst of their weakest places, mothers learn the trait of humility. When their hearts shatter wide open for their children, mothers draw desperately close to God, develop a dependence on him, and finally realize that their greatest asset is God's absolute trustworthiness. From the delivery room to the principal's office, past the graduation ceremony, through to the wedding festivities, and way beyond it all, the wisest mothers are aware that their ultimate hope lies in developing an unshakable faith in a loving Heavenly Father. And they will do all they can to pass that gift along to the ones he entrusted into their care all those years ago. King Solomon explained a mother well. From Proverbs 31 we read, "Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household, and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates."
Today we're going to go into the passage that Elizabeth read, part of Proverbs 31. If you have your Bibles, turn to that. It's a common theme at Mother's Day, although I have rarely done it. I've chosen to do other things, but today we're going to go into it. But while you're turning there, I want to talk to men for a minute first. Can we do that? So men, you don't have to be married, you don't have to be fathers, just men. I want you to listen for a few moments as we turn to Proverbs 31. A few years ago, Elizabeth and I were in a country in Asia, and we were doing a marriage conference. And we had been invited to do it with some friends who were from that country, and so we did it. And one of the things we required of the conference, and they actually suggested it, was that you could only come to this marriage conference if both husband and wife were present. And if one was away or couldn't make it, then the other couldn't come, whether man or woman. And the men got real upset about this ahead of time. And I didn't know why. And then I realized it was because the men wanted to come to the conference and then go home and tell their wives what was told at the conference. In other words, they wanted to sift it a little bit, maybe change the narrative a little bit. And so we said, absolutely not. If you can't have both there, you can't come. So about, I don't know, there might have been 75 couples there, and we decided in the morning we would separate them, the women in another room, the men in a separate room. And so my friend, who was the interpreter, and then his wife and Elizabeth in the other room interpreting, and we had a great time. And all of a sudden, I'm with these men, and I'm talking, and we're sharing, and they were all leaders of the church in this churches in this country, and especially in the capital city we were in. And one man's right in the front row, who was one of the leaders I learned and had met of the whole Christian movement of the country, small country, and he's there. And I made a passing comment about praying for your wife. You should pray for your wife. He raises his hand and in the local language says, "Why would I ever pray for my wife?" And so gets translated to me, and I thought there was humor in this. I thought, maybe I don't understand. He's just trying to break the ice and bring some humor in this situation. And so I asked my translator, I said, "Is he serious?" So we're having this conversation in English. None of them understand it. And he's going, "He's serious. I answer his question." And so I answered his question. And then I realized that in this room of husbands, men, that there was a sense that women were second-class citizens. That there were men, and actually there were children, and then there were wives. This was kind of the hierarchy that was going on. So at the break, we were going to spend the whole morning together, and in these countries in Asia, they have to have tea breaks. So we have this tea break, and I said to Elizabeth, I said, "We've got some problems here." She goes, "I know, these women are really struggling." And I said, "These men are just whatever." And I won't repeat what I said. She said, and this is what my wife, the one, this cute little lady that was up here, she says, "Let me handle it." And so I said, "Okay, you handle it." She says, "At lunch, send one person out every minute." Now think about it. We get an hour for lunch and there's 75 men in there. The math doesn't work. But she says, "One minute, one man." I go, "Okay." So after we finished the session, I said, "Just walk out, and you'll be greeted by someone." And what she did was she required that man to walk out, walk in the other room of 75 ladies, and go find his wife, and then hold her hand, which is totally inappropriate in this country that we were in to have any public display of affection, to hold her hand and take her to lunch and sit with her at lunch. And then a minute later, the next man did it. And a minute later, the next man did it. And a minute later, the next man did it. And what it did was require the purpose of holding hands was nothing sexual, nothing romantic, had nothing to do with romance. It had to do with when you hold hands, you have to walk side by side. You don't walk front back, you walk side by side. And so we did this, and it was an incredible picture. And some of the men got it and some didn't. 5 years later, we went back there and did another marriage seminar. And some of the same, there was a lot of others there at that time. There was about 200 people there, double. And some of the people were there. And so at the end, Elizabeth invited, and I, but she kind of took the lead on this, invited everybody up, and they love little certificates. So we gave them a certificate that they had completed this marriage seminar. And some of the men walked up without their wives. And so Elizabeth, with the microphone in hand, said, "Go back to your seat and get your wife," and embarrass these men, which again is totally culturally insensitive and all the rest. But if you're familiar with Asian culture, but she did it to prove a point that sometimes, not all the time, men have a higher opinion of themselves than they do of women. I'm speaking to you men, not you women, so you don't have to listen to this, but it's true. Men, sometimes we think we are better than women. And I want you to realize that the scriptures do not speak that way. I don't believe in a high view of women because there's an amendment to our Constitution or because Helen Reddy sang it a few years ago or because you got to be older to know that song, right? "I am woman, hear me cry." Remember that song? That's not why I feel that women are strong. I feel it because the scripture tells us that women have an incredible value in this world. It's not anything new. It didn't come in the 1960s. It came 1,000 years, probably more than 1,000 years before Christ. Throughout the scriptures of the Old Testament and the New Testament, there's a high view of women. Now, women, let's talk about it. And men, you can listen to it, but in Proverbs chapter 31 is an incredible statement about women. And I want us to look at it. And women, if you walk out of here hearing nothing, there's two things I want you to hear. Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. And God created you in his image and has a great value on you. Just understand that. And if you have been devalued in your life because of circumstances, other men, whatever it may be, I want you to realize that the true Father has high value on you. And today, of all days, Mother's Day, let's talk about it. So, Proverbs 31, verse 10. And we're going to look at this whole chapter, and just let me give you just a little background of Proverbs 31. And most of Proverbs is like it. Every verse is two phrases. So there's kind of an A phrase and a B phrase. So if I say verse 30A, that just means the first part of the verse, or B would be the second part, okay? So when you see it, you get it, because I want to walk through this. And it starts out in verse 10, an excellent wife who can find. The word there actually could be translated woman. It's not just about a wife. This passage only talks about being a wife in 4 or 5 verses. It only talks about being a mother in another 4 or 5 verses. It's really talking about being a woman. Some women are wives, some women are mothers, so those are subsets of a much larger conversation about women. So every woman in this room, young or old, Proverbs 31 applies. Don't think it only applies to wives and mothers. It's a passage about women that has two subsets of a couple verses on being a wife and a couple of verses on being a mother. But most of it has nothing to do with being a mother or a wife, or it does, but it has a larger sense on being a woman. An excellent woman or wife who can find, she is far more precious than jewels. If you're taking notes, I'm going to have 5 categories of a woman today. And the first one will be wife, second one will be mother, and then we'll go into 3 other categories. So what I want to do is look at it first as being a wife, and I'm going to use the TV here so that with the monitor so that we can look at it. The benefits to a husband about being an excellent wife. And let's look at it. First of all, in verse 12, it says, she does him good and not harm. A woman who's a wife does her husband good and not harm. You can just circle those words, good and not harm, because this is key. And the second one is a part of it, but it's all the way over in verse 23, and it says these words, the husband is known at the gates. What that means is that's where some of the commerce was taking place. We'll talk about work later in a moment, but commerce is taking place. There's some men around, and this woman has such a great reputation that her husband is known by the reputation of his wife. You see, ladies, it is important to realize that you will help your family with the reputation you have. And then it goes into the third part, back in verse 28, it says, her husband praises her. You see, if you do good and not harm, if you have a great reputation, ladies, your husband is going to praise you. It's a beautiful setting to understand that as a woman, as a wife, a subset here, that your husband will praise you. Number two is about children. And so that's the mother. That's what we're doing here today. And this is important and good to understand. Now, all you women know this, so I'm only telling you it, repeating it. But she rises early to prepare for her family, verse 15. She rises early. We know that from when children are very young, she rises early because of feeding schedules. We know she rises early because of school schedules. We know she rises early because there's not enough hours in the day for her to do her work, right? And so you're rising up early. And so this is more just a statement of who you are. She protects her family in the cold. Verse 21. It actually says she is not afraid of the snow for her household. This is important to understand because snow in Israel back in those days was like a hurricane in Florida or a tornado in Wichita. Didn't come every day. And a lot of people are afraid. They were afraid because when the snows came, they didn't have enough to prepare for the snows. It would get incredibly cold. They had no inner workings of ventilation and heating and those type of things. They had poor ventilation. Even if they had a fire, it didn't get into all the areas of the house. So she was not afraid, and she would protect her family. It was like when the hurricanes come, she was the one who would protect her family. And then the balance of that verse says, and she clothes them as well. We know this. Moms are known because when dad clothes the children, what happens? Right? Your dad dressed you, didn't he? You go, yes. We know when dad dresses the kids. But also, with all seriousness, she works hard at home to support her family. There's an incredible amount of work that occurs and never really ends, does it, mothers? It changes because when your children are young, it's a certain type of work. When your children are, you know, in their elementary age, the high school, college, even when they're out, you grandmothers and grandfathers know the amount of work you do for your grandchildren and for your children, even though they're adults. But here is the key. Her children rise up and call her blessed. That is a great reward when your child blesses you because of the work you have done. And again, nowadays it could be a spiritual child, it could be a foster child, it could be your biological children. It's not just the biology of it, but that we do that. Now, this is the part of Proverbs 31 that we're very familiar with. Be a good wife. Be a good mother. We get that. It's Mother's Day. But there are three others about women that we so quickly go over when we read this passage. Can I give them to you? Number one, or number three, I guess it is her work, your work in the community, and actually the work that you do. Verse 13 says, she seeks wool and flax and works willingly. I want you to know that women who work, and I use that outside of the family, we think that's something that's post-World War II. That's been happening for thousands of years. that you women have a grand responsibility and opportunity, and I think have a special giftedness to work in certain areas, and each one has a different giftedness. Some of you work in the home only and do that and work out of it. Some of you work outside the home and in the home. There's all different variations of this. But it says she works it willingly. There are times, and I think of single mothers, there are times where there's just not enough and you have to go out and work. And there's a willingness that comes with it, and it makes it even harder. It says she trades with the merchants. You have the same equality when it comes in business. You have giftings that allow you to negotiate and to work. And many times we say it's a man's world. That wasn't the case back then. There were women that were incredible tradespeople and would create the goods and trade the goods, and they were still beautiful mothers, beautiful wives, and all the other things as well. It wasn't one or the other. Nowadays we go, do you have children? Or are you a working woman? And all these kind of bifurcations that we do. That's not seen in the Bible. She negotiates land. I love that as an old realtor. She negotiates vineyards. So we're not just talking about homespun goods where she makes little pottery and she makes little crafts. That's all wonderful and all a part of it. But she's out there negotiating with the men real estate and farming and vineyards, and the big stuff. She is involved, and you as women have an incredible opportunity to get out there and do it. It continues. She works with fabrics. It actually talks about linens and all the other lace and things, and that was huge because back then they would trade spices for fabrics. Nowadays, all of us are wearing clothes that are disposable. You will not be wearing the same clothes 5 years from now. They're wear out. They're just kind of disposable clothes. Back then, clothes were used and actually were given generationally down because they had so many beautiful things. They were inlaid with gold, sometimes crusted with jewels. And she's making all these things, selling all these things, and these fine linens as well. She is known in the community for her work. She's also known because of her reputation as a wife, also known for her reputation as a mother, but also for this. Now, the next area is the area of this, the poor and the needy. This is important. A woman who loves the Lord, a woman who fears the Lord, a woman who is to be praised, also does it for other people. And could I say this, that I think this is one of the problems we have in the United States of America right now. Wasn't that way in the past, but that we collect and bring things in and do not give it back out. And I'm not talking about giving it to the church. Tithing is great, tithe to the church. But also there is a sense of giving to the poor, the needy, the underserved, the underprivileged, whatever word is now politically correct. There's a whole area of need. And see, we live where we don't have to see any of it, don't we? Have you ever thought about it? You can live in Boca Raton, which is Disney World. No, seriously, isn't it? If you think this is real world, we are missing it. This is not real world. And you can go anywhere else. So you want to go to Palm Beach, which is another Disney World. You can go up walled streets and never have to look over the wall. Called I-95. They've walled it off. You don't have to look and see the poor. You don't have to go up Dixie Highway. You can go up Ocean Avenue. You see, we can avoid the issues of the day. We never have to look at anyone in need. But God has called us to be open-handed to the needy and the poor. We have people in here who run organizations and on boards of some incredible nonprofits that work with the needy. They get it. But some people, I remember I was talking to a family one day, and I said, you know, they were asking me about giving, and not giving to the church, just kind of giving. And I said, I actually was bold enough to say, how much do you give? And they told me. And I said, my 14-year-old daughter gives more money away than you do. It's an embarrassment. And then he and she said, well, we have to protect our own. You know, those who help their own. I said, you are so overprotected, so overserved. You need to open your hands and begin to give some of it away. And some of us go, well, I don't know where to give it. I don't see the need. Well, if I could just say, open those eyes, start driving in different places, start making some phone calls, and you will see some things and people in need. And this woman, at least, saw it, and she was open-handed to the poor and the needy. I'm sorry I'm preaching to you, ladies and men, but it's time for us to be open for those who are in need. I'll just say this, and then I'll stop. I was driving to pick up my daughter from my house. I live in Disney World. She was at a place. I saw four homeless people on that four-minute drive yesterday in Boca Raton, on streets that there shouldn't be any homeless, four of them, four. I know several of them personally, have worked with them. Four homeless people, they're here. And it's not just about homelessness. There's other parts of poverty and need as well, fostering and all the other things we work with. So be open-handed. Now the last part, and this is the part I want to spend some time on, is on the woman herself. And this is really the crux of the chapter. Can I give you a few things, ladies? If you walk out of here, and let me just say this before the end, don't think you have to do every one of the things that I've said today, because this is a personification of almost like the perfect woman. And don't think, I can't do all 20 of these things. Well, take one. Take a second one, take a third one, reread this. It's a beautiful thing. First of all, Elizabeth read it in verse 17, strength. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. The strength is girding herself. They wore robes back then so that she could do work. She is a strong woman. This is not a passive woman. We laugh, it's the Jewish context. Jewish women were very strong back then. They're strong now. There's nothing wrong with being a strong woman if it is tamed. The second one is perceptive. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. She has a sense of what she does. And I look around here and I see many of you who do that. It's very important. But then she's also diligent and industrious. It says here in verse 18, she perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She is a diligent and industrious person. This is a great quality for a woman. And then in a play on words in verse 25, if you're just looking down, strength and dignity are her clothing. So it's not just about the clothes. The writer here also says that's what her dignity is. That's where her strength, she has strength and dignity, and it clothes her. So it's not about the beautiful linens that she clothes herself with, but it's the dignity with which she does it. And then this is a good one, because this is one sometimes women where you don't do well at. She laughs at the future. Look at verse 25, second half. And she laughs at the time to come. It doesn't mean laughing in this sarcastic, fearful way, but what it means is she is not a worrier. Ladies, can I just ask, how many of you are worriers? Just raise your hand. It's okay. Yeah, see, what the writer is saying is, don't worry about the future. Don't worry about the future, because worry personifies itself in other things. And you begin to clothe yourself with worry and fear, and people begin to see that, and all of a sudden, aberrations occur. And then your children become worriers, and this is a sin. It says laughing, it's not laughing because it's not true what's going to happen, but that she is not a worrier. Then he takes the positive side, verse 26, and says, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and teaching of kindness is on her tongue. So she's not a worrier, but she has a tenderness about herself. And there is a sense of responsibility and tenderness that this lady has. It's a beautiful thing. Wisdom, teaching of kindness, tender, not worrying, some great qualities, ladies, that comes out of this. And then the next one, does not eat the bread of idleness. And again, he uses a play on word of bread, where you're eating it, and what is that? That's laziness. That's where all the world is about you. And in Boca, we have a lot of entitled people in this town that just do it all for themselves, and that's not what we should do. And then at the end, and here's where we come to, and these were the verses, start in verse 28. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Verse 30 is the key to the entire chapter. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. He waits to the very end to talk about this because the last verse of the last two verses here about fearing the Lord go all the way back to the beginning of Proverbs where Solomon says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And then a couple verses later, he says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Fear of the Lord is just an old-fashioned way of saying that you believe in God, that you believe, in the New Testament sense, believe in Jesus Christ. They use the word fear, not fear as being afraid. Fear is also about awe. Fear is about worship. Fear is about respect. Fear is about understanding the person you fear is the Almighty, and we are not. That's what fear means. And so he says here, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. He didn't say charm is wrong and beauty is wrong. He didn't say all these things are wrong. It just says they fall short. And if you are seeking to get charm and beauty, it will fall short for you. It's okay, but it's not the best. But a woman who fears the Lord shall be praised. Ladies, at the end of the day, now you most likely will precede the men in your life. They'll die before you. You'll postcede them, I guess is a better word. The men will precede you. But at the end of the day, people are going to forget everything else. But they will remember your relationship to God and how that dealt with all the people in your life. Your children will bless you, not because you gave them the newest toys, not because you even gave them the best clothes or even the best education or the best house or anything else. They will praise you because of your inner beauty. And that is what you need to be striving for. And I believe men who are in here, half of you are men, you also need to be striving for, because this is not just about gender. Fear of the Lord is for all of us. Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. We never read that verse. We kind of stop before that verse. What that verse means is give her the fruit of her hands is the understanding that the influence, ladies, that you have, I believe, far surpasses that of men. And the fruit that you have is far greater than we as men have. I have the opinion that women have stronger influence on people than men do. Now, maybe as a boss, if I'm the boss or something, I have some influence. But long-term life influence, you women have it. And the question is, what are you going to do with it? And at the end of the day, if you do it well, the fruit that comes from it will come back to you. Amen? And let her works praise. praise her in the gates. There is a reason why all those football players, when they have faced with the TV, what do they always say? Hi, Mom. Like this, hi, Mom, whatever they say, because of the influence of a woman in their life. Don't ever forget that. Let's pray together.